folks. This episode of the Co-Working Values podcast is brought to you by Syncaroo. I was in a cafe in near Liverpool Street Station the other day, and the poor person behind the counter had like 7 different tablets, iPads, phones and computers all trying to manage incoming takeaway orders. And I thought that looks a lot like someone who runs a workspace in managing incoming requests from desk booking apps and other member requests and stuff like that. And that is where Syncaroo saves you a load of time, because it connects to platforms like, you'll know, Upflex and you'll know Flow, that help you book space and or help people book space in your space. And also in your workspace, you'll use software like Cobot, Office R&D and Nexidus, and it connects to that. And of course, it connects to Google My Business pages. And if you use WordPress, it can do that too. So it enables you to manage everything, all the data, all the bookings and everything connects in one place to help you run your co-working space or workspace, whatever you call it. And here in the London Co-Working Assembly in London, we're using Syncaroo to build an interactive map of London co-working spaces for people in the London Co-Working Assembly, so people can discover spaces and members can see each other. And I've seen Syncaroo develop over the last few years, and it is one of the most amazing things to happen to the workspace industry ever. And it does solve a problem and saves people who run co-working spaces a load of time and a load of energy and a load of money. So head over to syncaroo.com, sign up. You can do a free trial, and then there's paid versions as you go through it. And let's get into the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to, it might be my first Co-Working Values podcast from my luxury apartment in Vigo in Spain. And at the other end of the line is Sir Neil Usher. So Neil, I think in the co-working universe, you're known as Kate Usher's husband, but you know, what are you known for, and what would you like to be known for?
Oh, I think that's a fantastic thing to be known for. Thank you anyway for the invitation. Delighted to be here, obviously not being Vigo, which is, which I'm a little disappointed about, but I'll get there at some
point. Hold on a minute, Neil. I'll just have to reach for another sardine. Go on. Sorry.
That's the beauty of having the barbecue on all the 24/7. What am I known for? I've been in corporate real estate for 30 years, but I think most of what I'm known for is workplace related stuff. Possibly my first book, The Elemental Workplace, he said, hopefully. Probably not my second book, Elemental Change, because that came out in the middle of a pandemic. Most of what I talk about is workplace related subjects and things like that. People change, the way we adapt to environments, the way we evolve with them. And most of my sort of day is spent working with clients on that very thing. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's me in a nutshell. So the reason we're podcasting here today, folks, is because Neil has a book, which I was very excited and heard him like kicking it around for a year or so, which is... Is it called? Oh, I've forgotten the title. That's shameful, isn't it?
You cannot forget this title. That's shame on you, Bernie. You cannot forget.
Yeah, there's the event title and there's the book title. So our event title is "Can Co-Working Unfuck Work?" And what is your book title?
The book title, which actually I have to say, because it's sweary, I did find it really difficult to actually say it for a while, because I felt I sort of muttered it under my breath, slightly embarrassed about it. But no point in taking that kind of approach, really, if you've bothered to publish a book with this title. So the book is called Unfucking Work, subtitle, How to Fix It for Good.
That's it. And I can hear the smash it up in the background. So one of the things I really want to like, rip my eyelids off and use them as earplugs on LinkedIn is everyone debating about the future of work, the hybrid work, what is back to the office and all this type of stuff. And when we get in the room on the 15th, we're going to run we call them jams, because I don't like the word panel, but it is a panel, and about how co-working can unfuck work. And it's not a new conversation, but it's one that happens in corridors at conferences and in, you know, little chats and stuff like that. But there's a lot of,
you know, there's a phrase my friend Albert said, I think it was like March 2020, when everyone was panicking about remote work and, you know, what they're going to do and how's it all going to work. And he said, you know, everyone chill out, folks, because the pandemic has accelerated the future of work by 10 years. So, you know, it's actually saved us quite a lot of time. And he was very, you know, in tune with how the horror of what was going on. But I've been working, I wouldn't walk around going, I'm a remote worker, but, you know, I've been working remotely for at least 12 years now. And most of my stuff has been done online. And then I was actually amazed in March 2020 how many people didn't really understand how to work remotely. I just, probably because I'm in my little echo chamber of co-working, remote working people. But also I was amazed at how many people like didn't know how to, that you could use Zoom on your phone or things like that. And I feel like the world's caught up with, I don't want to say the way we should do it, but the world's caught up with what is possible. Do you think that's fair?
I think it is fair. If I go back similar length of time, about 12 years, which is when I first became interested in co-working, what it meant, what it was about, it was a reaction. And I think what really sort of grabbed me at the time was the for those people, you know, very small number of people who were actually offering co-work spaces and were thinking and writing about co-working, was that it just appeared to be a distinct reaction to the corporate world, in a sense of, you know, we want something different. And if we think about some of the brands, we won't name them, but if we think some of the sort of more well-known brands of co-working space, you know, they made a big thing about it being a reaction to the sort of the staid, boring, and, you know, just unchallenging environment of corporate workspace. But I think the difficulty was we approached it from the point of view of workspace. It's co-working seemed to equate to physical space and not what was actually going on in co-working space. The reason that people were there in the first place, sort of community that grew up, the relationships people started to make, it seemed to all be about whether you were using recycled furniture and, you know, how cool was your actual physical space and how, to what extent did you stuck two fingers up really to the way that, you know, to the rows of desks that you often found in great big corporate workspaces, which I thought was a shame really, because all we ever used to talk about was the physical space, not the actual activity, the way that people were working, what drove them to be working in a space like that and how they were actually getting everything done. Because to the point you made, I think most people who didn't realize that you could use things like Zoom on your phone at the point the pandemic struck, well, they were just reacting to what was in front of them. They were navigating, you know, their working environment using the tools that were available to them to get what they needed done. So, you know, it's not a surprise to me that occurred, because we sort of expand to fill the space that's in front of us in that sense. And unless we actually, you know, specifically and deliberately as individuals push the boundaries and say, look, you know, I'm using this tool, but there must be a better way to get this done, then we're just going to carry on using what we're given, using what's in front of us. So, you know, I think what it has done as well since COVID struck really is it's encouraged people to look beyond what it is they've been given, to actually explore, try and find out if there's different or better ways to do things. And I think that's also been one of the reasons that people are now more interested in co-working than perhaps they were before the pandemic, is because that's part of that new landscape of discovery. They're starting to think, actually, I could work in different ways. I could work in different places. I could use different tools. I could be a whole different person in my working life out there if I just stepped beyond what it is I'm handed on the day that I join this company.
That whole feeling there is one of the things that drives me about it, and I tread this line sometimes, because it's very easy to go sneer at people, and it's not a good thing to do at all, like go, oh well, you got a job and I'm a freelancer, and, you know, like my wife has always had a job and it works very, very well for her, and I've got other friends who love corporate life, and there's always a bit of me that's like, how could you love that? But, you know, they find a good company, and there are good companies out there, and they get fulfilled, and they, you know, they get to work on the stuff they love and everything like that. So it's a bit beyond, it's way beyond kind of, oh, you know, everyone should work in a co-working space and be a freelancer or be a startup. But there's something about that freedom of, like, you know, I love, and people have been listening to this for ages, though, you know, I love the idea of leaving your house, walking a few minutes, going to a co-working space, being part of your local community. And whether you go into that co-working space and you work on your, you know, you're working for like Vodafone or something, or you're working on your cool tech startup, or you're working on your, you know, copywriting career, is being part of your local community and getting your work done and, you know, not having to commute and all that conversation. What's your ideal for the co-work? I know you're going to say, well, there's not an ideal, but so I'm setting myself up. But, you know, what's your hope for co-working? Let me go with that question. What a minefield it is talking to you, Usher.
Sorry to leave you so stumped. I think you're going to see more people with corporate roles and people, you know, who will be enjoying those corporate roles and being in that environment. Nothing wrong with that at all. I think you're going to see more people exploring different local spaces. My hope is that people do look at local co-working just as much as, you know, they're probably the more attention-grabbing city center co-working spaces. One of the things I haven't quite squared off in my mind is why you would commute into the city center to go to a co-working space, unless obviously the community there was such a draw. Because people came from all over, I guess there may be an appeal in that sense. But I think, you know, there are times where being part of the local community is a fantastic thing to do. But if you're working in a large corporate, there are times where you need to work with your team and people from your own organization as well. So I don't necessarily think for people in those kind of roles, co-working is just switch to co-working. That's the panacea. Forget the corporate space. You can just go and get your work done in a local co-working space. Well, maybe not every day, but maybe there are times where you can broaden your outlook, you can broaden your connections and relationships, and who knows, you know, maybe you can come up with something really interesting or discover something really important by mixing with different people at different times, just to broaden your whole view of work in life. So yeah, there's plenty of opportunity, I think, for people in corporate roles to still attend their corporate workplace, to still be with the people that work for the same company, but also to spend some time just sort of broadening their horizons a little bit by maybe just, you know, walking for less than 15 minutes to a space where people from other fields have congregated locally as well. My hope really for co-working is that it draws more people in and you get a richer perspective from being in that space. Because we can't forget that if everyone in a co-working space is a sole trader or is part of a, you know, the smaller end of SME, then in itself that's its own bubble. You know, that's its own. So you referenced just now the fact that, you know, you've possibly been in this co-working bubble. So actually, co-working does need people to be in that space with a different perspective. It does need people who work for a large organization or have got a more corporate challenge than one faced by SMEs, and then people can learn from one another. So we, you know, we can't forget as well that some co-working spaces can be quite inward-looking, just in the same way as a large corporate workspace can be inward-looking.
Definitely. The best places I've been in have been where there's been a really good mix of people, and that is, and even just, you know, you sit down for lunch and, you know, someone says, and you say to someone opposite, oh, you know, so what do you do? And they're like, oh, I work for Megacorp, and then you start talking about their, you know, procurement pipeline or what their HR is and find out how it works. And you could read some of this stuff in books, but actually find, you know, and one of the things I've always loved about a co-working space is you see people from different companies every day, or different, you know, different work patterns, different work disciplines every day. And there's this massive learning curve. There's my mate Fernando, who is in Lisbon. Him and his wife Anna ran one of the first co-working spaces in Lisbon, and has been doing this PhD about how we micro learn off of people in workspaces. So there's tons of, you know, tiny little conversations that contribute to your learning over a period of time. I want to jump into something else. At the beginning of the book, you have this beautifully written piece about like what work is and how we've been missold. And there's a bit, there's something about a guy driving a lorry listening to piano, how to play the piano or something like that. And there's this idea of like what work is, and it just, maybe it's just because of where I am, but whenever someone says work, it seems like we default to I'm sitting in a desk using a computer or sitting around a meeting room. And there's this whole thing about the office, and it seems to be the only method of work available in the world, but I don't think that's true.
I've tried to make sure that the sort of the where I'm describing a situation in the book, I don't use the office as the backdrop for that. Like you say, the lorry driver listening to classical music. I've tried to make sure that it reflects the fact that I think it's somewhere in the region in the UK, about 60% of people do not work in an office. And a lot of those people during COVID still went to work at their destination. You know, their work could not be separated from their destination. Which is why one of the earlier sort of phrases that I try and dismantle in the book, one that just gives me the heebie-jeebies every time I hear it, is, you know, work is something we do, not a place we go. Well, for the majority of people in this country, it is still somewhere they go. And it's all very well for someone who doesn't have to go to an office to say that, but actually that is just displaying a really narrow-minded perspective. And the difficulty is we can be drawn into channels like LinkedIn, where, let's face it, most of the people on LinkedIn are people who work in an office because they're sitting in front of their computer and they decide to write something on LinkedIn. So it's an office workers channel. And we can't forget that, you know, really, there's hardly anyone who posts on LinkedIn during the course of a working day who's actually, you know, busy, you know, stacking shelves, driving a lorry or operating on someone or appearing in court or whatever. You know, they're not just going to drop everything suddenly just to post a comment on someone's LinkedIn post. It's an office workers channel. We can see the world purely in terms of office workers. And yeah, I mean, the amount of times being at home where I've silently screamed to myself when I think I liked your description of ripped off my eyelids and used them as earplugs. I think that's probably a lovely description of how I felt sometimes when I read this stuff, the narrow-mindedness of just thinking that work is related to the office, because it absolutely isn't.
What about the other word that I love but I have an issue with is the word creative? And it's like, because every co-working space has some form of like on there, and I used to recommend this, so I'm like, I'm even worse, but you know, they'd be at the top, it'd be like mega space for co-working, collaboration, creativity, innovation. And that word creative is, you know, I identify with the word creative, but it seems like such a loaded term. And it seems like when I see it somewhere, I go, oh, I get that. But then I go, that sounds really privileged, isn't it? Like, would, you know, someone from Urban MBA making killer videos look at that and go, oh, I'm a creative, I'll pop into that co-working space and start my career. So have you got a little riff on that for us?
Well, sort of, you know, I think all work is creative. It's an aspect of work. You know, there is an outcome from our work. And, you know, I use the picture of a security guard, you know, working a night shift. You know, they are creating calm and reassurance and the sense that, you know, everything is all right because this building or space or whatever it is being looked after and people are safe. So, you know, creativity is absolutely intrinsic to all work, in some degree or other. And also, I think one of the other things we should, when we start to think about creativity in terms of day jobs and things, we always assume that whatever is being created is somehow, you know, useful or welcome or of good quality. It's quite possible that we could be unbelievably creative and everything that comes out of that is complete rubbish. So, you know, it's a lovely thing to talk about. It's great to say this is a space for creativity. Let's face it, most people have their best ideas when they are doing something other than sitting in their workplace, wherever their workplace may be.
Definitely.
Now, what I think is quite interesting when you look at sort of non-office-based activity, I think you know, what's quite fascinating is I usually have, and it's all very personal, but from a personal point of view, I have all my best ideas when I am in motion, when I'm moving. So I've often thought to myself, well, if I had a role during the day where I spent a lot of my time moving, I might be able to come up with so many more ideas than I ever do when I'm actually rooted to a desk, having to just, you know, cooperate, coordinate, and just do the usual sorts of stuff that I do. And actually, you know, because we become so office centric, you know, we always talk about, yeah, we don't have our ideas in the office, we have them somewhere else. Well, actually, when I've done manual work, and when I've been gardening, or when I've been working in a packing factory, or when I've been driving, or, you know, I've done all sorts of things in over time, but, you know, building furniture and things, you know, my mind is usually wandering all over the place while I'm doing that, because I'm engaged in another activity. So again, you know, this sort of office-centric view of life does rather constrain the way we think about creativity as well. But let's face it, if you work in an office, chances are you're going to have your good ideas somewhere else, and then you're potentially going to bring them back to the office, and you're going to talk to someone about making them a reality. Because most of what is involved in FaceTime in an office, and that includes co-working space, is delivery rather than the origination of ideas. It's people working together to develop something that someone's thought of, rather than to think of the thing in the first place.
Yeah, that's so I've been hammering Duolingo all of this year, and I've always struggled to learn Spanish, which is, you know, I should have done about 17 years ago when I married a Spanish speaker. But one of the attractions to doing Duolingo is I'm engaged in that activity, and I actually calm down, and I have to think there as well, because, you know, I'm so advanced now, Neil. You have to think about how it goes together and everything. So I'm kind of distracted from, like, you know, what am I going to do with the podcast, or how are we going to sell more of this, or whatever is supposed to do at work. And actually, one of the attractions is that it disengages me from everything else. So I will definitely go and do 20 minutes of Duolingo in the middle of the day, God forbid, in work time, because it serves that same thing as, you know, going and doing something else instead of trying to, like, work on the problem. And walking around as well is, you know, I make sure I walk a lot every day, because when I'm sat at my desk, inspiration never strikes. So just before we wrap up, what would you... I know you've been preparing all morning for this question. Like, what would you like people to come and pitch or say or bring to the 15th of November at the London Co-working Assembly Breakfast Show, which is how can co-working... Is it how will co-working, or how can co-working, or can co-working unfuck work?
Yeah, good question. Because I think if we say can, there's an inevitability about it. It's going to happen. That's the wrong way around, isn't it? Where can is sort of open-ended, whereas if we say will,
yeah, yeah,
there's an inevitability about it. And I think even that is an interesting question, is, you know, what should the title of this talk be, or this sort of panel be, really? Is, you know, is it an inevitability, or is it not? Are we just, you know, the biggest danger with co-working has always been that instead of drawing in corporate life to be more like co-working, that co-working becomes more like corporate life, and it just becomes just another version of the corporate office, and all of the sort of behaviours and things that sort of, you know, are kind of endemic. So really, what do I want people to come to challenge? I'm interested in whether it is a can or a will, and I'm interested in, you know, in terms of how does co-working avoid getting sucked into the sort of the corporate model effectively, and actually draw that energy and draw that practice the other way. And in terms of the sorts of challenges that I've sort of set out to address in the book, you know, is there something fundamentally the case with co-working that it will challenge those statements, and that it will help to overcome them? Or are we likely to face just the same challenges, only slightly different, in a co-working space as we do in corporate life? And that really is something that I'm going to hope to get an answer to, because in looking at these challenges in relation to co-working, I think it is fascinating. You know, can it actually help to solve this? And if it can, then there's even more reason to make sure that co-working can actually teach, you know, the corporate world something. It's got something to give, rather than just being a sort of a parallel version of it.
Yeah, that's always a danger. I remember Juliet Morgan when you did the Elemental Change, no, the other one, Elemental Workplace launch at Herman Miller, and I asked, I said, what do people think what co-working is? And someone at the back said, it's just, they used a load of profanity, and they said it's what, you know, corporates, I think, are rebranding themselves as, you know, as their offices as co-working. And then it got to Juliet, who worked for British Land at the time, and she said, I'm one of those corporate bastards who's rebranding it. And then she went in and she laughed, and she was very cool about the whole thing. And then she said, actually, people are coming to us and saying, we want a co-working space for our company, not an office space. And there was this little nuancey change in how they did it. But it was, there's something about there was something that was very attractive to a company to have not an open plan office, but have like a co-working, collaborative, friction-inducing workspace rather than just like rows of desks. And so that's like kind of, you know, the journey of co-working informing corporations has begun long ago, Mr. Usher.
I think it has, but what I don't see is enough of a response. And I think there is a fundamental difference between co-working and, you know, corporate environments, and that is that in co-working spaces, people come freely and voluntarily from all different sorts of environments and backgrounds and businesses, and so, you know, there is an inherent limitation, which is also part of its benefit in corporate spaces, which is that people are all from the same organization. And I don't think anyone's really cracked at this stage getting the sort of the best of both, you know, making sure that people can work with the people from the same organization when they need to, and to do so in the same sort of spirit of co-working. Co-working has a spirit about it, which is also part of its, you know, significance and contribution. So can they get the best out of it, but also get the best out of having people from other organizations and with other backgrounds and perspectives to come into that space? Because corporates have to lock people out naturally. They just have to, close their doors. They have security guards and entrance turnstiles, and it's us only. And that is just fundamentally, you know, different from a co-working space. And getting over that problem is something that corporates really still have to focus on. How can they work and operate in an environment where anyone, you know, that's permeable, where anyone else can come in and make a contribution and be part of those people's network and their environment? You know, it is a real challenge. And what I saw in Australia, actually quite interesting, was a lot of corporate buildings have the ground floor of those buildings, even if there's one company in the whole of the building, the ground floor is public space, and a lot of the cafes and the sort of the general seating areas and things and workspace is all freely accessible by anyone because it's public realm. Anyone can come in. And I think they were, you know, from what I saw, and it was a few years ago that I saw it, it was starting to be really interesting to make a contribution. But you've still got the rest of the space locked off because it's for that company only. So, you know, there's still some fundamental problems to get over, really, in terms of the contribution that co-working can make, which will make life interesting in the years to come.
It will. That's a great place to wrap up. Where can we find you online, Mr. Usher?
I'm on Twitter, WorkEssence. Which was my old blog site, which is now defunct, but it's still WorkEssence on Medium. You won't find me on Facebook. You might find me on Instagram, but I have to say it's the most boring social media channel that I can consider. I've dabbled with TikTok. Probably best you don't look at what I put on there, although it's experimental, early days. Let's see where that goes. Despite having been critical of LinkedIn for being an office workers channel, I'm on there too.
Killing it on LinkedIn and TikTok, aren't you? We will put links to all those things in the show notes, and we'll put a link to your Amazon authors page, and we will see you on the 15th of November in London, when we have the London Co-working Assembly breakfast show, which we do every month. We're not going to do one in December because December's crazy. And we want to allow space for everybody to come to terms with the holiday season. And then we'll be back in January. And then if you go to coworkingassembly.eu and hover around for about 7 seconds, one of those annoying but highly effective pop-ups will come up, and you can put your email address in there. And every week we send a newsletter that is content from around the European Co-working Assembly community, events that are happening with our friends and partners around the European Co-working Assembly community, and this podcast. So thank you very much for your time and attention today, and be careful out there. It is a jungle.